behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I am Ben.
Ben, today's topic is one that I am a huge fan of. This is something that I was eager to do once we got the suggestion.
Yeah, this was a listener suggestion, or I should say this is a listener suggestion from our friend Alex R.
Alex wrote in beginning of this year, first day of this year, as a matter of fact, and said, hi, Scott and Ben. I've enjoyed listening to your podcast for the past few months. It's provided hours of entertainment for me while I'm out on the road. My brother, Ben R, I won't give his full name, and I both own Ford Festivas, not Fiestas.
Important distinction.
On its surface, the Festiva is an old, semi-obscure, cheap, captive, import car not many people care about. Oh, I don't know about that. I care about them. However, the Festiva and cars like it enjoy a strong cult following, which is very true. The Festiva in particular is a popular platform for hypermiling and performance modifications thanks to its lightweight, it only weighs about 1,750 pounds, and a plethora of Mazda engines that are fairly straightforward to swap in if you choose to do that. I'd love to hear a podcast about the economy cars of the late 80s and early 90s, discussing how they rose and fell in the American market and the people that love them today. In my mind, cars like the Festiva, the Geo Metro, the Suzuki Swift, and even the true oddballs like the Daihatsu Sharad and the infamous Yugo were the last true U.S. market cars that were designed specifically for no-frills transportation in the tradition of the great people's car.
Cars for the people.
Well, yeah, like the Volkswagen Beetle, right?
Right.
Something like that. So, it goes on to say that I've included a few pictures of my Festivas, past and present, two aqua-colored cars and one white, as well as my brother's Festiva, which is the one in red.
Uh-huh.
And said, thanks for reading. So, Alex, when we got this note, I was actually really excited about it. I believe I responded to this one, too, right away and said, yeah, we're going to look into this for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that is exactly what we've done today because it's a fascinating decade of cars, the 1980s.
Right. And what we're going to find as we're looking at this decade is that there were some achievements made back then due to a number of factors that are just now maybe being replicated.
Yeah, I guess so. And well, sort of. I mean, we'll get to
sure
if they are being replicated or not, because I don't really think that they are. The truth is that the most efficient cars that we have today tend to be the hybrids and the all-electric cars, of course, right?
Right, right.
So kind of put it in a ballpark perspective, the hybrid cars of today, the 2015, 2016 models are not quite achieving the miles per gallon levels that just the basic cars were achieving back in the mid-1980s.
Yeah, which blows a lot of people's minds, but we assure you, ladies and gentlemen, this is absolutely true.
Yeah, and we'll explain why.
Yeah, and here are a few words that we can use just to put you in the mindset of these 80s economy cars. Let's just throw some words out, Scott. So, inexpensive.
Yep, no frills.
Yeah, no kidding. Lower power.
Yeah, definitely. How about, I keep going back to it, but bare bones. I mean,
yeah.
Really bare bones.
Lightweight.
I mean, no options. Lightweight is a good one. That's a really good one. Small,
yeah, for sure. Compact. So this kind of paints a picture of it. I remember when my folks bought a Geo Metro and I was a wee young tyke, and you've heard me complain about this before.
Yeah, I have. And you know what? At one point I had a girlfriend that had a Geo Metro as well with a three-cylinder engine, right?
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing to me, that it had a three-cylinder engine.
It was a 1-liter three-cylinder engine, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It didn't really need a whole lot more than that, did it?
No, because it was such a lightweight car. And we can talk some more in depth about the Metro itself a little bit later in the show. But what got me, I guess it was strange as a kid to see a three-cylinder engine. It was the first time I'd seen one in a car.
Mm-hmm.
And we would work on this car, change the oil and stuff.
Sure.
So it's so we got into the, under the hood and we're digging around. But also, after a time, man, that thing was weird to drive. It's manual. So if you have a slippery clutch on a manual after a certain time, it becomes a situation where there's like one person who's good at driving it.
Sure.
And that was my dad. Mm-hmm. And
he knew all its tricks.
Yeah, he knew all the tricks, and no one else really did.
Mm-hmm.
And I, Mom, if you're listening, I think you may have driven it a couple times, but I completely don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's just the way it goes. I mean, someone does figure out all the little nuances of the mm-hmm. vehicle and mm-hmm. And realize, like, okay, I know that, you know, I can't have the heater on when I'm trying to climb this hill because it just it takes too much power away from it. And that's the way these cars were. I mean, you'd try to go, you know, accelerate up a hill and you'd feel like there's a rubber band pulling you backwards.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them were just miserably low-powered vehicles, you know, and they didn't have a whole lot going for them other than they were, you know, efficient ways to get around town or back and forth to school or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just basic, again, no-frills, bare-bones transportation, and that's what they were all about. And, you know, gas sipping was what it was all about, too, because coming off of, you know, the 1970s, the 1960s, I guess, well, sort of the 1970s, that's kind of what led to this, but a lot of cars still had big V8 engines, and that was what, you know, a lot of people felt they absolutely had to have. So it was a bit of a trying time here in the United States to get, you know, the U.S. public, the general public to say, yeah, I'm going to give that that Toyota a shot and see what it's like, or that Honda Civic that's brand new at the time. I'll see what that's all about.
Right, and let's consider, too, that a lot of people had big, mean cars from, you know, Detroit Steel straight from the 60s, right? The era in the 70s.
Yeah, if they're hanging on to it for a decade or so.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're going to trade in for this little hatchback that has a 1.5-liter engine that, you know, 60 horsepower or something like that.
Right. It'll get you there eventually kind of car. I don't know.
It's a huge, huge switch. So that's the thing. And, you know, I was really pondering this on the way in today and actually all last week I have been.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of you know, low-dollar cars, you know, like real, real cheap economy cars from this era.
Mm-hmm.
And one was kind of pushing into the 1990, it was a 1990 Festiva that I had.
Well, I think we should have a little bit of bleed over here into the 70s and into the 90s.
I agree. I mean, maybe the end of the 1970s and the beginning of the 1990s. I mean,
yeah.
There's so many cars to mention. I don't know if we're going to mention them all. And I think that's something we should mention is that there's more out there than we're going to be able to talk about today.
Oh, for sure.
And there's
even
diesel.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's diesel variants. There's there's gasoline cars, but you're not going to find any hybrids. You're not going to find any all electrics or anything like that on our list.
No hydrogen or you know, vegetable oil powered cars, etc.
No, exactly right. And later I want to get into this, and there's a really interesting write up about some of the older cars versus the newer cars, like almost a direct comparison, not brand new because it's an older article, but there's one that compares a 1989 Honda CRX HF versus a 2009 Toyota Prius. So 20 years separate them, and we'll show you the difference.
And a lot of bells and whistles, a lot of technology.
Oh, yes, a lot of technology. That's the dramatic difference between them.
No, Scott, I derailed us just a little bit. You had a Festiva.
I did have a Festiva. Yeah, I had a 1990 Festiva, and that's not the only economy car I guess I had. I also had a Mercury Lynx station wagon from the early 1980s.
Whoa.
And I want to say, I think I've quoted it as being a 1981, but it may have been a 1983, something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure. And I don't really recall the mileage being outstanding, but it was, it was probably like close to 40 miles per gallon.
That's great. Yeah,
that's
man.
Really good.
Yeah.
But I didn't stand out. What did stand out, however, was that Ford Festiva that I drove. It must have, I would swear on the highway that thing was getting close to 50 miles per gallon. I really would. And I don't know if I have any, old log books or anything to back that up or anything, but I think it's pretty routine for people with a car like that, you know, or that car specifically, to get that kind of mileage. And I think that the claimed miles per gallon, I have it here somewhere. The claim miles per gallon of the Festiva was something like 35 in the city and 42 in the highway, but for the L version. And that was with a 1.3-liter engine, 63 horsepower is all it had, and a 10-gallon tank. So right there you can see that, you know, it's a much smaller engine, but that's not the only thing that sets economy cars apart. There were also a lack of features, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. No power windows, mm-hmm. right? That would be a big thing. You're not going to see a lot of bells and whistles in terms of entertainment options, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
Like you'll have a radio.
Sure.
But you wouldn't have necessarily a cassette player, right? There's also not going to be high-end upholstery, like, you know, leather interiors. Just imagine that on an Escort.
Almost all plastic interior. Cheap plastic. Like, not even, you know, probably won't even have any kind of green to it, really.
Right, it's just and lightweight.
Flat plastic. It's going to be lightweight. That's right.
Lightweight gray plastic.
Yeah, you know from that Metro, right?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah. You know, the interesting story about the Geo Metro, just a little bit of trivia, the whole genesis for that, which, you know, is really a Suzuki, ultimately. The whole genesis for that was the idea of whether the engineers could build a 100 mpg four-passenger vehicle.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Well, you know, a lot of between the theory and the practice, a lot is often lost.
You know, when the Geo brand became a thing, you know, within General Motors,